Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more.
Hi, Claire.
Hey, Lisa.
How are you doing?
I'm great, and every time I get to be on the radio with you, I'm even better than that.
Oh, that's very sweet of you.
Well, it's true.
Well, I enjoy being here with you also.
Well, good. Yeah. I'm excited for our topic today because I've noticed it's been sort of coming up in some of our other talks.
It has. Seems like we're always mentioning stress.
Yeah, and the question is stress really all that powerful?
I would say so. I think we underestimate its powers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm happy that we're talking about it today, and I'm expecting to be wowed by your depth of information.
Man, you're just really putting the pressure on, aren't you?
No pressure. Oh, no okay. pressure. I wouldn't want you to feel stressed.
Okay. Oh, man. You're good. You're good.
I know. It's thick in here.
Yeah. So let's start talking about stress. What I want to start with is just talking about our society and stress today. So 100 years ago, death was usually due to an acute illness, and some kind of infection or some kind of accident. Whereas today, we usually are dying from chronic illnesses. And these chronic illnesses are often due to stress. So a couple examples would be heart disease or stroke.
And so the key words here are acute versus chronic.
Right.
Acute is sort of old. Yeah. And chronically, we're getting diseases that we live with for a while and then eventually succumb to.
Exactly. And they're usually caused by stress. So.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so.
Don't get stressed by that, though.
Oh, man. That's right.
I'm done now.
No, that's fine. This is good. It adds some humor to the topic, because I do feel like this could be kind of a heavy topic.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I want to say is that when we think about animals, they turn the stress response on for a very short time. Maybe they're being chased by a predator or something like that. And then they recover from the stress response. Whereas humans, we turn on the stress response for longer periods or for many periods in one day. So we might have one acute stressor in the morning, and then we have another one, at work before lunch, and then we have something in the afternoon that really stresses us out. And so it makes it hard for us to recover from stress.
So like when we were cave people and we did a typical fight or flight, that was to run away from a saber-toothed tiger or something.
Yeah.
But now that would have been an acute
right.
response. Mm-hmm. And now we have more chronic all
exactly.
day long kinds of things.
Yep. All day long. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. And if we are chronically stressed, it can make us physically ill. And then in addition, humans, we can turn on the stress response with just a thought or a feeling.
That's also hard to deal with because you could almost stress yourself out just thinking about trying not to be stressed.
Yeah.
So, I'm joking about this and it's really a fairly, very serious topic. So I guess I'm curious what's going on in our bodies when we have that chronic stress, that event.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are happening, hormones that are being released, and the main hormones are cortisol, but also epinephrine is another hormone that's released. And so what the purpose of these hormones is to break down the energy stores that we have, such as fat or glucose, release the energy from our tissues and organs so that we can have energy to deal with the stressor.
Like to run away.
Yes, exactly.
I get it.
Yeah. In addition, our heart rate increases, our blood pressure increases, and our digestion is actually shut down as well as other functions in our body are shut down. So growth and healing is shut down. Reproduction is shut down, and you know, there's no time for any of those things when we have acute or when we have stress, when we have to run from the tiger.
Because that's, we were designed for it to be short-lived though, right?
Mm-hmm.
That level
Absolutely.
Of stress.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a few other things when we're stressed. So actually pain is blunted, which is a good thing. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, but, long-term it becomes a problem, long-term stress. And then learning and memories is actually increased too. But again, that's in short-term stress.
So if pain is blunted, that would be like maybe you normally couldn't run very fast, but you could run faster?
Yes.
That's good news.
When you are scared of the tiger that's chasing you. Yeah. If you have a pain, you can just ignore it.
So it sounds like it can invade pretty much any of the body systems.
Mm-hmm.
What instigates the stress response? Where does it come from?
That's a really good question. So there's two main things that cause the stress response, the brain and our hormones. And so in talking about this, I just want to go back to the autonomic nervous system, which is another word for automatic. You know, it's part of the nervous system that we don't control. We've talked about it at different shows, but the parasympathetic and the sympathetic are two branches of that nervous system. And the sympathetic is our stress nervous system, whereas parasympathetic is rest.
So I remember that by stress and sympathetic both start with the same letter.
That's good. I like it. Yeah. So the regulation of the sympathetic nervous system comes from the brain and the hormones. So there's three parts of our brain, and I'm going to kind of get scientific here now, but it's all applicable. So there's the primitive part of our brain, which is the hypothalamus and the brainstem. And actually reptiles have this kind of brain. And this part of our brain regulates our bodily functions and responds to stress. So let's say, you know, we get cut and we're bleeding, or we're in an extreme temperature changed very cold area. It's the reptilian part of our brain that sends out the signal of stress to our body. And then the next one is the limbic system. And this is the part of our brain that actually responds to emotions. So say we're, nervous about doing a public talk. It actually, that our limbic system will send a message of stress to our body, and maybe our heart rate will increase and our palms will get sweaty.
Yeah, I was just thinking of sweaty palms.
Yeah. And then the last one is the cortex. And this is the part of our brain, our thinking part of our brain. And when we have a stressful thought, the cortex sends a message to both the limbic system and the reptilian parts of the brain, which then send out a message of stress to the rest of the body. Yeah.
I like that. The three parts to the brain.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So the bottom line is basically that stress initiates from our brain, as well as our hormones, like I said. But the thing with the hormones most of the hormones that are secreted in our body, they don't just happen on their own. They don't get secreted on their own. Basically, a message comes from the brain that tells different glands to secrete hormones. So many of the stress hormones that we have, it still originates from the brain, that signal.
So it comes from the brain,
mm-hmm.
and is affecting any part of our body, and can cause like the chronic kinds of diseases.
Yeah.
More likely in us humans than, you know, we're not cave people anymore, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So we're much more concerned about the chronic effects of stress than we are in an acute situation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, so why don't you, can you talk about which things would be most useful for our listeners to know about, for instance?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's quite a bit. There's quite a bit that our listeners that are important for our listeners to know, but I'm going to just start with heart disease. So because it is such a common condition in our society, when we get stressed, our heart beats faster and our blood pressure goes up. And so we know that high blood pressure is a very common condition, you know, in our society now. And what happens when we have high blood pressure is it actually causes damage to the arteries. So we get the damage and then we get inflammation, and that allows plaque to form. And so plaque in our arteries is, you know, what results in strokes or heart attacks. And so, you know, if we damage, we can damage our, you know, coronary arteries as well. And those are the coronary arteries are the ones that are, you know, supply our heart with blood. And so when we damage those and we get inflammation and plaque in there, the vessels don't dilate like they should. And then we run into problems like heart attacks. So heart disease is a big one.
So if someone has plaque, and I've heard of like bypass surgery where they've had stents put in for blocked arteries, those are relevant to the heart itself. But is it possible that you could have a blockage from high cholesterol?
That's a great question.
AKA stress and inflammation. Could you have that anywhere in your body?
You could. Well, and I was thinking about just the cholesterol thing when you mentioned that. I mean, you can have blockages in your carotid arteries that cause a problem, you know, getting blood to your brain, which can result in stroke. But I do want to say one thing. I heard the word cholesterol, and I just want to, you know, remind our listeners that, you know, cholesterol is not the only thing or the, you know, to blame for heart disease, because it's actually the inflammation in the arteries that is the problem and actually causes cholesterol to deposit there, causing the plaques. And so it's important to, you know, it is important to check your cholesterol, but also to check your, have your doctor check your C-reactive protein, high sensitivity C-reactive protein level. That's an indication of your inflammation. And, you know.
And I don't think that's commonly done. You'd have to ask for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have
and
to ask for that.
And it may or may not be covered by insurance, depending on whether the doctor thinks it's necessary.
Well, it's not really the doctor's. It's the insurance company that decides whether it's necessary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. It is a challenging thing, but I think it's an important thing to look into, investigate.
So I would just make this one comment that when I was coaching a lot of people who were in a very stressful career paths, that from year to year, I could see that they were more stressed because their cholesterol went up. So I felt like the stress, then the inflammation, and then the cholesterol is actually trying to fix the cell walls, right?
And that's right.
And so if the cell walls are inflamed, then they're maybe swollen or red or not as behaving as properly like a cell wall as they should. And so the cholesterol is trying to fix that.
Yeah. So in that case, I mean, I think it goes back to diet.
Yes,
I think, you know, eating.
Sort of where I was going.
Okay. Sorry. Did I steal your thunder?
Nope. Not at all.
Okay. Well, the anti-inflammatory diet, you know.
Right. And, you know, just an anti-inflammatory lifestyle as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, and I know that the next topic that I think you might want to mention is diabetes.
Yes,
because
diabetes.
Because that's definitely got a correlation with heart disease.
Yes,
and absolutely. Pre-diabetes as well, since 90 million people are pre-diabetic in this country.
It's a lot of people. Yeah, so we're mostly talking about type 2 diabetes here, but, you know, how it relates to stress is when we're not stressed and we're eating, we normally store our energy from the food that we eat via the hormone insulin. So insulin helps to get those energy molecules into our storage areas. However, if we are stressed and eating, we actually are not going to be storing those that energy. We actually are liquidating our energy stores. Like I said, you know, when we were talking about some of the general things that happen with stress, is we're taking the fat and the glucose out of our energy stores. So with chronic stress, the brain actually sends a signal to our cells to ignore insulin. And this is another way of saying insulin resistance. So there's insulin in our blood trying to tell, you know, our body to store the energy that we're eating, but the cells say, nope, I'm not letting you in. You're stressed. We need to have this energy in the blood vessels, you know, for energy because you're stressed out. So the glucose can't get into the cells, and, you know, having the high amount of glucose in your bloodstream is damaging to the cardiovascular system.
And so the blood sugar that does not get into the cells is going to reduce in less energy.
Right? That's true too, yes.
And so then you could also sort of extrapolate that chronic stress can cause type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's part of the picture, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't usually hear that one, don't we? You don't hear that.
No. You... Well, you heard it now.
It's mostly about diet. I mean, you know, there's multiple parts to it. Diet is a huge part of it too, but just don't underestimate the stress portion of it. So the next thing I just want to say is in regards to overeating. When we're stressed out, we crave carbohydrates and sweets. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, Claire, but
oh yes,
I certainly have.
I have a sweet tooth.
So
we do battle.
You do, huh?
Yes.
So yeah, when we're stressed, we crave the carbohydrates, and the reason for that is it's our body's attempt to decrease our cortisol. So remember, when we get stressed, our cortisol gets high, and so we crave the carbohydrates to decrease the cortisol to back to normal. Remember, we want to be in that recovery mode from the stress event. But what happens is when we're eating too much, because we're craving all these sweets, those excess calories get stored in our fat tissues, and particularly the abdominal fat. And the abdominal fat is actually considered an endocrine organ. Endocrine is hormones, just to remind you guys. The reason we call it an endocrine hormone is because it's sending out inflammatory signals to the body. Inflammatory cytokines is what we call them. That's the scientific word. And so those cytokines cause inflammation, which again takes us back to cardiovascular disease and damaging the arteries and causing inflammation and plaque and all that stuff.
So I'm sure everyone who tends to carry fat around the middle is thrilled to hear that it's called an endocrine organ.
I know.
Instead of just, if I quit eating and start exercising, then I wouldn't have this organ. I'm joking, but it is something to think about, because overeating can now, in many circles, be called a disease.
Yes.
You know, or overeating, obesity, I should
say. Right.
And then there's degrees of obesity, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So is it a disease just like diabetes or heart disease?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Just one more thing is that, you know, some people have released more cortisol during stress than others, and it actually stays higher for longer periods. And as a result, they have more cravings.
So I think, you know, at some point in time, we'll probably do a show about around sugar.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know, how to reduce cravings and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And that just leads me right on to another topic, which mm-hmm. is, you know, if you're talking about overeating and food, mm-hmm. that leads to digestion. And so when I think of digestion now, I've heard the term the gut brain or the second brain. Is that influential? Is it influenced by stress, I guess, as well?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So stress shuts down our digestion. And so.
Oh, that's right. Because rest and digest.
Yeah.
Parasympathetic nervous mm-hmm. system. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we're not going to digest our food when we're in a state of stress. So enzymes, hydrochloric acid, pancreatic, you know, gallbladder, the enzymes stop getting released. And so we're not able to digest our food as well. And then as well, the contractions, the movement of food through our intestines, slows down when we become stressed. And so the gastrointestinal tract can become uncoordinated and not work properly. And so, so it's actually what we call a functional bowel disorder. So function means, you know, there's no actual abnormality of the tissues of the digestive tract. It's just that it's not functioning as it's supposed to be. And so irritable bowel syndrome is one of the biggest functional bowel disorders that we know of. And so people that have this usually are very sensitive to stress. Their digestive tracts are. So it's an important thing to address when.
You know, one of the things that concerns me is that people live with stress to the point where they just think of it as part of daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And they often, again, back to my health coaching experience, they'll tell me that they're not stressed.
Mm, right.
And
they're
so
not
that
aware they
concerns
are.
Concerns me. Yeah, that people need to be more in their body mm-hmm. and more aware of the impact and influence of stress.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. One more thing I just was going to say in regards to the digestive tract and stress is that there's this conception, misconception, I guess, that maybe some of you have heard of them, some of you haven't, but that there's a certain bacteria that causes ulcers. It's called Helicobacter pylori. And actually, it's been found that only 10% of people with that bacterium get ulcers. And so it's actually the stress that kicks it in and causes the Helicobacter pylori to be a problem. And so, so it's just stress can cause ulcers.
So stress causes ulcers, or stress causes the H. pylori to activate?
Yeah, I would say that. Stress is a contributor to ulcers. That's a better way to say it. Thank you, Claire.
That's because I thought that a lot of ulcers have been eliminated since they found that out about the bacteria.
H. pylori.
Yeah.
Well.
But, you know.
Who knows?
What do I know?
Yeah, that's okay.
So this sounds like there are just a myriad of things that stress can influence.
Mm-hmm.
So far, they've had a little bit of logic to me. Are there some other places that you want to mention?
Yeah, I think.
Probably a ton of them.
Yeah,
huh?
There are. So fetal and child development is a big one that you wouldn't think of. So, environment for the baby begins actually at conception and really not at birth. I mean, it is happening at birth too, but it starts way before the birth. You know, the fetus is very sensitive to the stress of the mother, and the hormones that are in the mother's circulation actually affect the baby. And this is kind of an extreme example, but there's been studies of, you know, fetuses of women who were starved during their pregnancy due to a famine. And the babies end up having a propensity to have diabetes because they're in that stressful state of being deprived of nutrition. The baby starts storing all the energy that they get due to the starvation, and it ends up causing diabetes somehow at a later, age.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it actually has been shown to have a multi-generational effect. So it's pretty serious, you know. Again, that it is a severe case, but we have to just remember that, fetuses are very sensitive to stress of the mothers.
So I'm just sort of curious, this popped into my brain. How do you know you're stressed if you don't think you are? Are there some tests or assessments, things that people can
good
take
question.
Where you score 1 through 10 on questions or something? And so even if you're not really actively aware of it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure about questionnaires. You said tests, and, you know, me and my medical brain went to the cortisol test. You can actually do a salivary cortisol test, and you test it 4 times throughout the day because cortisol has a...
rises in cyclical
high
in the morning and
correct.
Low at night.
Right. Exactly.
Well, what I was thinking of is long ago I took some kind of a test, and you scored 100 or lower for going down based on how much stress it created. Like the highest was, let's say, death of a spouse.
Yeah.
And then there's divorce. Then there was death of a sibling or parents. And then there was, I just remember moving and, you know, changing schools and, you know, on down. I mean, that would be one
way to assess
way
it.
To say, oh, I guess maybe I am stressed even if I'm not aware of it. So we could get out of denial.
Right.
Would be the objective.
That's good. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That river in Egypt.
I like it, Claire. So one more thing I was just going to say about fetal and child development is that children are really affected by the mothering style of their mother. So if the mother is anxious, that, that can send a message to the child that, you know, the world is not a safe place. And there's children, you know, that have been tested, and they actually have been found to have higher levels of cortisol when they have anxious mothers. And so...
Is that sort of epigenetics?
No,
No?
I mean, epigenetics is more about, well, I guess it is. Yeah, because when I think of epigenetics, I think of our how we can change the destiny of our genes through our lifestyle and environment. So I guess, I mean, if you're in an environment with a mother that is very anxious, then your genes are probably going to be affected. Yes.
Uh-huh.
But, you know. Interesting.
Just one of the newer words in my vocabulary.
Yeah. Good one. I like it. Yeah. So going on to, I wanted to talk about growth. So, it, you know, kind of comes off of the child thing. So when a child has high levels of cortisol or stress hormones, they actually have a decreased amount of growth hormone. And so we know we need growth hormone to grow. And so, you know, the severe cases of children that are not growing properly, it's called actually stress dwarfism. In, you know, like Romanian children in orphanages who are deprived of, you know, having, they're just in the crib all day long by themselves. They actually do not grow as well. And so just something to be aware of. Again, that's a severe case. But, you know, if a child is not growing as they should be, maybe they're in a very stressful situation in their home. So that's for children. But then in regards to adults, growth hormone is also important, not because we're growing in height, but growth hormone helps to build strong bones. And so,
oh, here we go. Yeah, more interrelationships.
Yeah, exactly. And so women can develop osteoporosis actually due to low growth hormone due to stress. And as well, cortisol, the stress hormone, causes calcium to come out of the bones. And so it's a very interesting story I had when I was a student at the clinic. We had a patient that had, she was taking care of herself as far as like eating really well and exercising and taking the supplements, you know, for to ward off osteoporosis. But she still had developed osteoporosis. I mean, she had been doing this for years before, you know, she got to the age where she developed osteoporosis. And she just was really upset, excuse me, and confused. And come to find out, she had a very stressful life. She was taking care of her elderly parents and her brother who was disabled. And she had a family herself. So she was trying to juggle that. And I mean, she was worn out in that way. Yeah. So she had a lot of stress and it was likely one of the main causes of the osteoporosis. So something to consider.
You know, stress is such a funny word. We need a little bit of stress to get us motivated, get out of bed in the morning and be productive. But then the way the lifestyle has evolved for a lot of Americans, it's now become a balancing act to not be too stressed.
Yeah, I agree. And we definitely need the tools to deal with it and to learn how to adapt to it.
Are we going to get to the tools later?
We are. I think we're actually about ready to wrap up here today.
I think you're right. This is a lot to digest. Mm-hmm. There's so many different aspects, and we've covered a couple of diseases, and we've covered a couple of sort of concepts like, you know, growth and development for children and mm-hmm. how one disease is affected by stress and connects it right into the next one. That's kind of
huge.
The good news about that is that if you can learn to balance out some stress, that you could not only affect not getting one disease, but maybe not getting more than one disease, right?
Absolutely. I agree.
That would be good.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, another important point before we finish up today is just that acute stress is not a bad thing. It's the chronic stress. And so, and the repeated stressors throughout the day, you know, all day long. And so we don't have to say that stress is evil.
The other thing I would say, and I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you didn't.
Is that it's not necessarily stressful until we make it stressful.
It's true.
So it's how we respond to mm-hmm. a given situation mm-hmm. that dictates whether we're going to start producing cortisol and norepinephrine and, you know, adrenaline and things like that. Obviously, if we are about to be hit by a car, that's an acute situation. But yeah. all those things you mentioned about happening during your day, those are the chronic ones, right?
Absolutely.
That accumulate all together.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Well, I think we're about done for today on this. We're going to continue next week with, I'm afraid to say, a whole bunch more situations where stress is a big player.
Yes.
But I'll be looking toward that with interest, and also towards when we get to tools and modalities of balancing out our stress.
Absolutely. That's going to be the best part.
Yeah. I say balance out because sometimes it's pretty hard not to be stressed in the world today.
I agree.
But we can learn to balance it in a way that works for us. So
great.
So I thought you did a great job today, Lisa.
Oh,
I learned
thank
a lot.
You. Thank you. Yeah. I've enjoyed it. I enjoy talking about this.
Well, until next week then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is Peak Health Radio Show, where we're dedicated to educating and inspiring you, our listeners, to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you desire.
And this is the Voice of Fast Show. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Until next time.